Okay, welcome everyone to another Tuesday afternoon in America. I'm Stephen Roberts. This is Cancel the Cabal. The last 2 days, been having a lot of congestion, a lot of chest congestion, and it's coming out in my voice. So I'm going to try to get through the rest of the ending plague. A scholar's obligation in an age of corruption. And then I'll see about if my voice still hangs around. I'll see about starting another book. I should be able to get rid of this. Get finished with this book in the hour that I have here. I think I only have like 8 pages left or something like that. But I find it quite interesting here that the I'm calling them Scariants, but they are choosing to call them Variants. It's a Scariant because they have to keep the fear going. They have to keep this lie up. So when you invent a new Scariant every other couple of weeks or whatever, it, yes, Murica, I think about 8 pages or so, somewhere in there. And it's none too soon for me. I'm getting tired of all this technical crap. I do find it quite interesting also that they are buying up the Scariant vaccines before they even come out with them. The government is, and the vaccine companies. How do you come up with a vaccine before the Scariant comes out? I don't know. It's just a little perplexing to me. Okay, I'm going to go back about one paragraph to revisit a little bit. I gave my presentation the next day over Zoom from my 500 square foot apartment in Ventura, California, and got generous applause when I finished. I soon got legal representation and will take legal action against the all involved in this unnecessary and violent assault on me. This madness has got to stop. If I remember right, she was going to board a plane, and she attempted to board a plane and roughed her up, threw her out. That's my life. I got physically assaulted in airports, even while wearing a mask, denounced in the mainstream media, and attacked in print in scientific journals. And of course, they wouldn't allow me to publish a response. In July 2020, the journal AIDS Research and Human Retroviruses published an article with the title Fake Science, XMRV, COVID-19, and the Toxic Legacy of Dr. Judy Mikovits. Here's the abstract. One cannot spend more than 5 minutes on social media at the moment without finding a link to some conspiracy theory or other regarding the origin of SARS-CoV-2, the coronavirus responsible for COVID-19 pandemic. From the virus being deliberately released as a bioweapon to pharmaceutical companies, blocking the trials of natural remedies, to boost their dangerous drugs and vaccines. The internet is rife with far-fetched rumors. And predictably, now that the first immunization trials have started, the anti-vaccine lobby has latched onto most of it. In the last week, the trailer for a new bombshell documentary, Plandemic, has been doing has been doing the rounds, gaining notoriety for being repeatedly removed from YouTube and Facebook. We usually would not pay much attention, much heed to such things, but for retrovirologists like us, the name associated with these claims is unfortunately too familiar, Dr. Judy Mikovits. How would you feel if you woke up one day and read that about yourself as you were having your morning coffee? Let's talk for a moment about the claims I started making in 2020 as the insanity of a COVID-19 crisis was kicking in to high gear. Probably the thing that makes my colleagues in public health and health the angriest was that I was claiming SARS-CoV-2 was most likely a release from the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And why did I say that? Because others in the scientific community had been talking about the risk of gain-of-function research for several years. This is from an article published in the journal Nature on November 12, 2015 by Declan Butler with the title Engineered Bat Virus Stirs Debate Over Risky Research. An experiment that created a hybrid version of a bat coronavirus, one related to the virus that created SARS, severe acute respiratory syndrome, we got something weird going on here, folks. I had to check my internet there for a few seconds because I thought it was going out. Looks like everything's okay, so nothing got dropped that I can see of. Okay. An experiment that created a hybrid version of a bat coronavirus, one related to the virus that created SARS, severe acute respiratory syndrome, has triggered renowned debate over whether engineering lab variants of viruses with possible pandemic potential is worth the risk. In an article published in Nature Medicine on November 9th, scientists investigated a virus called SHC-014, which is found in horseshoe bats in China. The researchers created a chimeric virus made up of a surface protein of SHC-014 and the backbone of a SARS virus that has been adapted to grow in mice and to mimic human disease. The chimera infected human airway cells, proving that the surface protein of SHC-014 has a necessary structure to bind to a key receptor on the cells to infect them. I genuinely don't understand the criticism of the scientific community when I'm simply pointing out what they've said in their own journals. I had nothing to do with this publication. I'm simply drawing people's attention to it. And how is it that something that scientists were actually debating in 2015 suddenly became a ultimate act of scientific heresy in 2020. When I'm along with others commenting on it, the article continued, but other virologists question whether information gleaned from the experiment justifies the potential risk. Although the extent of any risk is difficult to assess. Simon Wayne Hobson, a virologist at the Pasteur Institute in Paris, points out that the researchers have created a novel virus that grows remarkably well in human cells. If this virus escaped, nobody could predict the trajectory, he says. The argument is essentially a rerun of the debate over whether to allow lab research that increases the virulence, ease of spread, or host range of dangerous pathogens. What is known as gain-of-function research. In October 2014, the U.S. government imposed a moratorium on federal funding of such research on the viruses that cause SARS, influenza, and MERS, Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, a deadly disease caused by a virus that sporadically jumps from camels to people. The latest study was already underway when the U.S. moratorium began. And the U.S. National Institutes of Health, actually the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, headed by Dr. Anthony Fauci, allowed it to proceed while it was under review by the agency, says Ralph Barrick, an infectious disease researcher at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, a co-author of the study. The NIH eventually concluded that the work was not so risky as to fall under the moratorium, he says. I don't know about you, but the conclusion that such work was not so risky might be the biggest miscalculation in history since the U.S. Navy decided to their fleet at Pearl Harbor wasn't at any risk from the Japanese attack. Remember that all through 2020, I was attacked for saying that the virus likely escaped from the Wuhan Institute of Virology. On March 26, 2021, the former director of the CDC, Dr. Robert Redfield, finally caught up to my opinion in an interview with CNN's Dr. Sanjay Gupta and discovered in an article titled "Former CDC Director Surprises CNN's Sanjay Gupta by Revealing He Believes COVID-19 Originated from the Wuhan Lab," from the opening of the article. CNN's Sanjay Gupta appeared taken aback in a new interview with former CDC Director Robert Redfield, shared his opinion on the origins of COVID-19. Gupta spoke with Redfield as part of the new CNN documentary about COVID-19 pandemic, and the former CDC chief reveals he thinks it's likely the coronavirus originated from the Wuhan lab and was possibly being transmitted in September 2019, or even October, or actually even August or September. If I was to guess, the virus started transmitting somewhere in September, October in Wuhan, Redfield said. That's my own view. It's only an opinion. I'm allowed to have opinions now. Redfield continued that he thinks the most likely etiology of this pathogen in Wuhan was from a laboratory, you know, escaped. Though he said he's not implying any intentionality and reiterated, it's my opinion. Is it just me, or when you read that section, does it seem like the former director of the CDC is pathologically pleading not to be the next victim of cancel culture, or worse, vilified by the powers that be, and completely lose his status. Redfield knew and said, and did nothing when he worked on Trump's task force. Then he lied for a year while millions of lives were ruined. He also co-authored a February 1, 2020 article with Anthony Fauci saying that masks don't work. I wish I could come up with some way to show my supreme disrespect of any kind for this kind of cowardice. But I think I'll just let you use your imagination. The average person might reasonably ask, what is to be done? I'm telling you what I'm doing. I'm trying to get to the bottom of this controversy. I don't think that China is solely to blame for this problem, but the United States is as well. It doesn't matter where the viruses originally came from. Immortalized cell lines containing many unsuspected viruses have been shipped all around the world for more than a quarter of a century. We need to stop all of this research and declare a moratorium on all vaccinations on a schedule until the animal and human aborted fetal tissue is removed and the double-blind placebo-controlled studies are done. The next step is to remove the serial felons and liars from the public health organizations and restore liability and informed consent for all pharmaceuticals, including vaccines. What I've tried to convey in this book is that there's a scientific elite that exists above presidents and prime ministers, and they genuinely refuse to reveal the truth of what they're doing in their labs, even to their own leaders. The president of China is probably in the dark just as much as our own leaders about what actually happened. I doubt that, because China would just torture them and kill them to get the truth. They're not going to spare any bones about that. That's what they're going to do. The president of China, okay. I have tried to make this transparent to the general public by writing these books, because I believe we, as scientists, are public servants, and you, the general public, deserve to know what's going on in these labs. The spirit in which I write this book is in accord with the declaration by President Abraham Lincoln during the darkest days of our Civil War. Wait a minute. The spirit in which I write this book is in accord with a declaration by President Abraham Lincoln during the darkest days of our Civil War, that I am a firm believer in the people. If given the truth, they can be depended upon to meet any national crisis. The great point is to bring them the real facts. Toward that end, with the help of attorney Larry Klayman and his organization, Judicial Watch, I have joined their class action as an expert witness against the government of China, the People's Liberation Army, and the Wuhan Institute of Virology for their role in the COVID-19 crisis and to discover the truth. From the opening of the action, which was filed in the United States District Court of the Northern District of Texas on March 17, 2020. This is a complaint for damages and equitable relief arising out of the creation and release, accidental or otherwise, of a variant of coronavirus known as COVID-19. But the People's Republic of China and its agencies and officials, as a biological weapon in violation of China's agreement under international treaties, and recklessly or otherwise allowing its release from the Wuhan Institute of Virology in the city of Wuhan, China, in Hubei province, by, among other acts, failing to prevent the institute's personnel from becoming infected with the bioweapon and carrying it into the surrounding community, and proliferation of the United States into the United States. Since biological weapons have been outlawed since at least 1925, including by China's membership in treaties, these illegal weapons constitute and are in effect terrorist-related weapons of mass destruction of population centers. Many have warned me against taking such bold public action, and I am a woman of faith and fear only the Lord. We are not promised a life free of suffering. I look forward to a life in eternity, hearing the words, "Well done, good and faithful servant." We all deserve the truth from our leaders and the best health that science can give us. We have a God-given immune system that can defend us from disease, no matter what is created in laboratories. The Lord has given us a great abundance on this earth and keep us healthy. He has not left us defenseless in this time of terror. It's up to each one of us to maintain the purity of our body temples as created by God. The mark of the beast is not a needle in the arm. It's a fear in the mind that causes us to doubt. We have all been deceived, but each of us can repent and change our hearts and minds, never allowing ourselves to fall into the trap of fear and hatred like COVID-19 again. Forgive yourself and forgive others. The obligation of a scholar, and indeed every citizen, is to discover the truth, speaking the truth, and live in truth. I hope that throughout my efforts and example, I have helped shed light on some very dark places in science and encouraged a healthy resurgence of truth, unbiased science. If I have brought light to these issues, then perhaps I will have enhanced my fervent wish that the best of health finds its way to all of us. And that is the very end, folks. Just in time for the first break. So, I'll play about a seven minute 15 second break here, so be right back in just a few minutes, everyone. Oops.
What is heaven gonna be like? I don't know about you, but when I think of heaven, I'm excited. Yes. Because I got property up there. Yes. My D-A-D-D-Y with Jesus. Been with Jada for 32 years. My mom been with the Lord for 28 years. And man, one day, we all gonna be together one more time. Don't feel sorry for me. We got joy coming in the morning. And not only that, when I get to heaven, I'm going to have me a brand new body. I'm not going to walk with a limp. I'm not going to talk funny anymore. I'm going to walk and talk like Jesus. If you don't like the way I am, hang in there. I'm still in the oven. God's still in the kitchen. And God's still cooking on me. And when God get finished cooking on me, God going to pull me out of the oven. And God going to say, well done, good and faithful servant. But when I think of heaven, when I think of my mom and my dad, when I think of a brand new body, George, I can tie my own shoe. I can button my own shirt. What a day. Glorious day. That will be. There is coming a day when no heartache shall come, no moon clouds in the sky, no more tears to dim the eyes, all in peace forevermore. On the happy golden shore, what a day, glorious day, that will be. What a day.
Thank you.
can I come back? I got me a noon song.
Okay, I am back. I'm going to start a new book. I want to start Klaus Schwab's previous book. I think from 2015 or 2016, Shaping the Future of the Fourth Industrial Revolution. Just trying to look here through the first few pages, see if I can see when he actually did this. Okay, I'm not seeing anything jump out right in front of me, but I am going to do 20-some-odd minutes or so until the next break here, and then see how I feel after that, if I continue or not. Because it is getting a little bit rough. My nose is filling up with junk, and I'm not going to push anything and lose my voice or anything like that. But this is the foreword to his book by Satya Nadella, CEO of Microsoft. Through insightful coverings and publishing, the World Economic Forum and its founder, Klaus Schwab, have continued to cast a bright light on both the opportunities and the challenges of the Fourth Industrial Revolution. The confluence of data with massive computational storage and cognitive power will transform industry and society at every level, creating opportunities that were once unimaginable, from health and education to agriculture, manufacturing, and services. My company and others are betting on the convergence of several important technology shifts: mixed reality, artificial intelligence, and quantum computing. With mixed reality, we are building the ultimate computing experience, one in which your field of view becomes a computing surface. Your digital world and your physical world become one. The data apps and even the colleagues and friends on your phone or tablet will be available anywhere you want to access them. While you're working in your office, visiting a customer, or collaborating with colleagues in a conference room, artificial intelligence will power every experience, augmenting human capability with insights and predictive power that would be impossible to achieve on our own. Finally, quantum computing will allow us to go beyond the bounds of Moore's laws. The observation that a number of transistors to a computer chip doubles roughly every 2 years, by changing the very physics of computing as we know it today, providing the computational power to solve the world's biggest and most complex problems. MR, AI, and quantum may be independent threads today, but they are going to come together. Similarly, industry and society must come together to force on empowering both people and organizations by democratizing access to intelligence to help solve our most processing challenges. For example, if AI is one of technology's top priorities, healthcare is surely one of AI's most urgent applications. Coupled with mixed reality, the cloud, and business organization tools, AI will not be central to healthcare transformation underway on the science bench, in the clinic, and throughout medical centers' operations. Advancing global health through precision medicine, understanding individual variability in genes, and immunological systems, environment, and lifestyle for each person can only be accomplished through web-scale machine learning, cognitive services, and deep neural networks. This is an ethical imperative to be inclusive and transparent in the design of these technologies. But there also is an engineering necessity. The products and services simply will get better as a result. Toward this end, in 2016, Microsoft, Amazon, Google, Facebook, and IBM announced a partnership on AI to benefit people and society. The aim is to advance public understanding of AI and formulate best practices on the challenges and opportunities within the field. The partnership will advance research into developing and testing safe AI systems in areas like automobiles, healthcare, human-AI collaboration, economic displacement, and how AI can be used for social good. Restoring economic growth and productivity for everyone is an aim we all share, and technology will play a leading role. One formula to consider is to emphasize education and new skills in combination with intensified application of these technological innovations broadly across local economies, especially in sectors where the country or region has a comparative advantage. In a digital age, software acts as a universal public and private sector in every industry, regardless of location, Detroit, Egypt, or Indonesia. This universal input needs to turn into local economic surplus. Breakthrough technologies plus a workforce trained to use them productively, multiplied by the intensity of their use, spreads economic growth and opportunity for everyone. Finally, trust in today's digital world means everything. In every corner of this world, we need a revitalized regulatory environment that promotes innovative and confident use of technology. The biggest problem is equating laws that are ill-suited to deal with contemporary problems. The prescient topics explored in this book, coupled with the dialogue it speaks at the World Economic Forum gatherings, are vital contributions to understanding and solutions. The potential benefits are unprecedented, and as this book concludes, public-private leadership and partnership are essential. And here is Klaus Schwab's preface. I don't think I'm going to read it in his heavy Nazi German accent, but you'll get the picture. The world is at a crossroads. The social and political systems that have lifted millions out of poverty and shaped our national and global politics for half a century are failing us. The economic benefits of human ingenuity and effort are becoming more concentrated. equally is rising, and the negative externalities of our integrated global economy are harming the natural environment and vulnerable populations. The stakeholders least able to absorb the cost of progress. Public trust and business, government, and the media, and even civil society has fallen to the point where more than half of the world feels the current system is failing them. Gee, I wonder why. The widening gap in trust between those in their country's top income quartile and the rest of the population indicates that society, that social cohesion is fragile at best and very close to breaking down at worst. It is in this precocious political and social context that we face both the opportunities and the challenges of a range of powerful emerging technologies, from artificial intelligence to biotechnologies, advanced materials to quantum computing, that will drive radical shifts in the way we live, and in which I have described as comprising the fourth industrial revolution. Hang on a second here. These emerging technologies are not merely incremental advances on today's digital technologies. Fourth industrial revolution technologies are truly disruptive. They upend existing ways of sensing, calculating, organizing, acting, and delivering. They represent entirely new ways of creating value for organizations and citizens. They will, over time, transform all of the systems we take for granted today, from the way we produce and transport goods and services, to the way we communicate, and the way we collaborate, and the way we experience the world around us. Already, advances in neurotechnologies and biotechnologies are forcing us to question what it means to be human. The good news is that the evolution of the fourth industrial revolution is entirely within our power. We are still at its very earliest stages. The social norms and regulations governing emerging technologies are in the process of being developed and written today. Everybody can and should have a say in how new technologies affect them. By standing at these crossroads, But standing at these crossroads means we bear a huge responsibility. If we miss the window of opportunity to shape new technologies in ways that promote the common good, enhance human dignity, and protect the environment, there is a good chance that the challenges we experience today will only be exacerbated by narrow interest and biased systems further entrenched in inequalities and compromise the rights of people in every country. Anticipating the importance of the fourth industrial revolution and shaping it for the benefit of all rather than just those privileged enough to be wealthy or skilled requires a new way of thinking and a broad understanding of the different technologies that will impact individuals, communities, and organizations and governments. Shaping the future of the fourth industrial revolution has been designed to empower you to emerge in strategic dialogues around emerging technologies within and across the communities, organizations, and institutions of which you are a member, helping you to actively shape the world in line with common human values. Shaping the fourth industrial. I just read that. This book is the product of many world-class experts from across the World Economic Forum's diverse community. Section 2, in particular, emphasizes the perspectives of leading thinkers from the Forum's Global Future Councils and Expert Network. Were it not for their generous contributions and time and knowledge, it would have been impossible to cover the breadth of subject matter into depth requiring to make sense of the most impactful technological domains. I also very much appreciate the thoughtful and most relevant reflections provided by Satya Nadella in the foreword. My thanks particularly go to my co-author Nicholas Davis, head of Society and Innovation, as well as Thomas Philbeck, head of Science and Technology Studies, whose intellectual contribution, hard work, and dedication were absolutely essential. Thanks to Anne Marie Engeltoft Larson, knowledge lead Fourth Industrial Revolution, who brought critical nuance to the issues around technology and global development. I would also like to deeply thank Katrine Eggenberger, who once again provided invaluable support in managing the internal and external publishing of the book. Kamal Kamuri, who expertly designed the book's layout. Fabien Stassen, whose editing skills greatly improved the text. And Mel Rogers, whose strategic mindset and values-driven leadership resonate throughout the chapters. My experience as founder and executive chairman of the World Economic Forum, the International Organization for Public-Private Cooperation, has shown that sustained and inclusive process means working across disciplines and stakeholders to promote common visions and confront zero-sum thinking. If we are successful, we can choose the fork in the road and offer the opportunity to address the failures of past industrial revolutions and create a far more inclusive, sustainable, prosperous, and peaceful world. I hope this book, along with my 2016 book, The Fourth Industrial Revolution, helps guide our steps in the right direction. He's got two books named The Fourth Industrial Revolution. That's interesting. Oh, this is shaping the Fourth Industrial Revolution. Okay. The introduction. In January 2016, the publication of the Fourth Industrial Revolution called for all of us to take collective responsibility for the future where innovation and technology are centered on humanity and the need to serve the public interest. The new technology age, if shaped in a responsive and responsible way, for some reason, I don't need my readers today. I don't know what the deal is, but I'm seeing better without them. The new technology age, if shaped in a responsive and responsible way, could catalyze a new cultural renaissance that will be able to, that will enable us to feel part or something much larger than ourselves. A true global civilization. The fourth industrial revolution has the potential to robotize humanity and thus compromise our traditional sources of meaning, work and community, family and identity. Or we can use the fourth industrial revolution to lift humanity into a new collective and moral consciousness based on a shared sense of destiny. It is incumbent on us to make sure that the latter is what happens. You will be the Borg hive mentality. What is that they said? You will be resistance is futile. You will be assimilated. That's what it was. Okay, I think I'm going to take a break right here, everyone. Mark my space, mark my place, and try to clear my head a little bit. See if it's going to be best reading with or without my readers. Not sure yet. So, let me see here. I guess a couple of short songs kind of add up to about 7 minutes. Be right back, everyone.